25 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. The man on my far left is Dave Manuk. The man in the middle is Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and some Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Adam Vingan. Adam covers the Nashville Predators for the Tennessean newspaper. Adam, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure, Adam. Brought you on to talk about the Predators, the Jets' Central Division rival. We actually haven't seen the Predators in quite a while, which is sort of unusual scheduling, and I don't think we see you again until either March or even April at this point in time. It's sort of been a long, hard struggle for the Predators this season, but they finally are back into a playoff spot after this week's results. Are you getting the impression now that this is a Predators team that after a season of upheaval, a season where, you know, the historic leader of the team, Shea Weber, gets dealt to Montreal, that they're finally sort of getting their feet under them and are beginning to take the steps forward to being the popular Western Conference playoff pick?
I'm sorry for jumping in there a little too soon.
No, you're all good.
They seem to really enjoy Western Canada because last year, it was a trip to Western Canada that included Winnipeg right before the All-Star break where the Predators won four in a row that the team points to as the so-called turning point of their season, because last year around this time they were also very inconsistent, but they were able to use a Western Canada road trip to sort of start the second half where they were one of the best teams in the NHL and make the playoffs. And this year started out, like I said, a lot similar. They've been pretty average for the most part this season. But they're 3-1 on this five-game road trip, which ends tomorrow in Minnesota after having defeated Calgary and Edmonton back-to-back and losing 1-0 to Vancouver earlier this week. And despite the fact that they only won three games, is their longest winning streak of the season. Three games. They have now put themselves in a third-place tie with the Blues in the Central Division, which speaks to how the Blues are playing, which we know they're slumping and their goaltending is an issue, and I believe the Blues are in Winnipeg, yes, either today or tomorrow. And the overall weakness of the Western Conference this year, but, you know, it says something about the Predators that they seem, as you said, to be finding their footing at the right time of the season. They've won 5 of 6, which is their most successful stretch of the season, and even grabbing a point in Minnesota tomorrow against a very good Wild team, that would be 7 of 10 possible points on this road trip. That would be incredibly successful.
Adam, P.K. Subban returned to the lineup against the Edmonton Oilers last night. He missed 16 games with an upper body injury. How did he look in his first game back?
I thought it was a relatively quiet game for P.K., and I think that was fine. I think that's what he was looking for. I don't think the coaching staff was looking for him to dazzle right off the bat. But there was a statistic I looked up yesterday that really stuck out to me. And though it's not quite all because of PK, it's certainly related to him. In the 29 games that he played before he suffered the injury or was nagged enough by the injury to be taken out of the lineup, the Predators were the third best puck possession team in the NHL. In the 16 games he missed, they were fourth worst. So there was a significant drop-off in possession without him in the lineup. And last night they had 44 shots on goal, including outshooting Edmonton by 15 at even strength. And he was certainly a part of tilting the ice in the Predators' favor. The Predators were aiming to keep him at around 20 minutes of ice time, but as the game got tight, Peter Laviolette kept checking with PK to see if he could handle those late game situations. They trusted him to do so. He played nearly 23 minutes through overtime, and the Predators were able to win a very good hockey game last night in Edmonton. So they definitely need him back. They're also missing Roman Josi, who's out with a reported concussion and has been out for the past four games. But once they get the two of them back, that will sort of liken it to a trade deadline acquisition a month or so from the trade deadline, getting their top two defensemen back. They had to play three games without them to start this road trip, but they did win two of them. So happy for the Predators, I believe. Well, no, I definitely don't believe. I know that they're very happy to get PK Subban back.
Adam, how good has Pekka Rene been? He's obviously one of the most important cogs in this wheel that is the Nashville Predators.
He was outstanding last night, particularly in overtime. And, you know, Pekka Rene, we know, isn't the goaltender that he used to be. He's probably not going to be a regular Vezina Trophy finalist anymore. He's 34, and he had a pretty down season last year, especially by his standards. And it's amazing to me how fast Predators fans vilify Pekka Rene when his team isn't playing well. But when he's playing well, that seems to be completely forgotten. But I think a big help for him is having a very capable backup in UC Saros, who has been also outstanding this season and was 5 minutes from his second shutout the other night before the bottom dropped out and the Flames scored three goals in 3 minutes and the Predators had to hold on for a 4-3 win in a game they were leading 4-0 with 5 minutes left. The goaltending has been great. Before last night's game, since the turn of the new year, in nine games, the Predators combined between the two of them had a .956 save percentage at even strength. So they've been very, very good, and they're a large reason why this team has been playing so well.
Adam Vingan, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Adam covers the Nashville Predators for the Tennessean newspaper.
You know, Adam, you just mentioned UC Saros, and his numbers are just incredible. 1.44 goals against average, .952 save percentage. He's only played nine games, but those numbers are incredible. Just as an aside to kind of a throwback to old school hockey, how cool is it to see a goaltender that's 5'11 and thriving in the NHL? You don't see many small goaltenders anymore.
Especially in Nashville, because when you think of the history of Predators goaltenders, they're all very tall, whether it be Pekka Rinne or Anders Lindback or Devan Dubnyk for a couple of games. They all are 6'4", 6'5", 6'6". UC Saros, I believe, is the second shortest goaltender to ever play a game for the Nashville Predators, which is a very odd statistic, but it was something I looked up at one point. but yes, he's just incredibly explosive and athletic, and you know, I believe it's now 10 career starts for UC Saros because he made his NHL debut last year. He's allowed one goal or fewer in six of his 10 first NHL starts. And he was incredibly close to making it seven before the Flames turned on the offense late in the game the other day. But you know, Pekka Rinne is still going to get the bulk of the starts. There's been a lot of talk in Nashville amongst fans that they believe it should be a 50-50 split between the two. That's not going to happen. Pekka Rinne is going to be this team's starter until he falls apart or retires. But when they need him to have a rest, they have a great goaltender to give him that rest. I mean, it was interesting. They just finished playing a back-to-back. UC Saros started the first game of the back-to-back. It was the first time this season that Pekka Rinne hasn't started the first game of a back-to-back. And that's an opportunity that the Predators can have for UC Saros and Pekka Rinne because of how good UC Saros is. And it allows Pekka Rinne to perhaps take some pressure off of himself to perform. Not to say that he's going to say, well, UC's playing tomorrow, I can take it easy. But knowing that he has another capable member of his tandem, I think would take some pressure off.
Adam Vingan of the Tennessean is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Adam covers the Nashville Predators. Adam, Ryan Johansson, it's his first full year as a member of the Predators. Is he a guy that is a 15 to 20 goal scorer per season, or is he a guy who's a 25 to 30 goal scorer per season, as we saw when he was a member of the Blue Jackets?
He really should be the latter. I mean, this is a guy who has scored 26 goals in the NHL, scored 33 goals in the NHL. So to end up with 14 last year, I think you could sort of cut him some slack because of the situation, getting traded midway through the season, but only 7 goals in 46 games. That isn't to say he's not shooting the puck. He already has almost 100 shots on goal this year, but the goals haven't been there. The points are, he has 32 points in 46 games. He's trying to work on the two-way side of his game. They've given a lot more responsibility in that regard, and I think he's done quite well. But when you're a number one center like he is, you need to be able to produce offensively as well. And again, that isn't to say that he's not. 25 assists, but he does need to start picking up in the goal-scoring department. This is a big year for Ryan Johansson. He's in a contract year. He's a restricted free agent at the end of this season. And they have to make a decision about how much and how long they want to commit to him. Really, honestly, they have no choice but to commit to him because they have no one else to replace him. And especially with the player they had to give up, who's an all-star this year, Seth Jones. You can't walk away from Ryan Johansson. The thing is, Ryan Johansson is going to get overpaid. That's what's going to happen. He's going to ask. I mean, his qualifying offer is $6 million. You know, his agent may start with a 7, which would not be unreasonable for the ask. But I think when you look at other players in the league, other centers making $7 million, whether it be Andre Kopitar, or Joe Thornton, or Nicholas Backstrom, Ryan Johansson is not in that class yet. But the Predators are going to have no choice but to give him that money because they need him. So if he can pick up the goal scoring, maybe they'd be more comfortable giving him that much money.
Adam, the Predators have had a disappointing couple of seasons with the expectations being so high for them. Is there any heat on Coach Peter Laviolette right now?
No. It certainly wasn't a good look for them in the first half of the season. After 41 games, they were out of a playoff spot. Considering that this was a team that was picked to probably be the favorite amongst analysts and reporters to be the Western Conference representative in the Stanley Cup final. It was incredibly disappointing. But Peter Laviolette's contract was extended at the start of the season. And yes, I know that just because its coach gets an extension doesn't mean that he's got job security necessarily. But they had a slow start last season as well, and they were able to pick it up. I mean, this team has faith in Peter Laviolette. David Poile has faith in Peter Laviolette, and we're seeing this team respond in the second half of the season already, starting to play quite well their best stretch of hockey. So, if they were to have played the way they did in the first half all season long, I'm certain that there may have been his feet may have warmed a little bit. I've never thought his job was any significant danger.
Adam, we saw the Nashville Predators recently acquire Cody McLeod to, you know, increase the truculence on this Predators team. You know, we're about a month and a half away from the NHL trade deadline on March 1st. Are you expecting David Poile to be active? And if so, who's he going to try to get?
Well, you know what? David Poile always has his hands in something. We've seen that already in the last calendar year, trading for Ryan Johansson and PK Subban. I think, to borrow the old general manager cliche, I believe that the Predators are going to look at the return of injured players as trade deadline acquisitions. Getting Roman Josi back, already having PK Subban back, getting James Neal back recently from 5 games out, Colin Wilson is still on injured reserve. I think that they're going to look at that as more of the trade deadline plan. Cody McLeod was a player that they had been looking at for a little while, but it fell into place last week because the Avalanche finally decided that it was time to sell. I mean, this team got younger and faster during the offseason, but they certainly missed the physical element and the veteran presence of the guys that they lost. And I'm not just talking about Shea Weber. I'm talking about Paul Gostad. I'm talking about Eric Nystrom. I'm talking about Barrett Jackman, players who, while they aren't flashy, know what it's like to play in the NHL, veteran presence in the locker room, able to bring the physicality. They didn't have that, and they needed Cody McLeod to do that, and he looks re-energized since coming over from Colorado. He was marginalized there in his 28 games. He's definitely a big part of their physical element now. I think this team is starting to play a lot tougher and more physical lately, and having him in that mix certainly helps.
He had a nice little scrap with Jerome Iginla.
Yeah, and threw down with Milan Lucic last night, was on the wrong end of that one, but the Predators didn't really have anybody to do that. And I know that fighting isn't necessarily a part of the game anymore as much as it used to, but you do need those deterrents on the ice. And the Predators have a lot of skilled players who do take those big hits. I mean, the game before they acquired Cody McLeod, Roman Josi got knocked out of the game. Victor Arvidsson, although a very small player, gets thrown around a lot. So, you know, to have that guy to put your head on a swivel, I think certainly helps.
We'll let you go on this last question, Adam. Mike Ribeiro, he was a healthy scratch this week. Craig Smith, he was a healthy scratch this week. You know, Smith has got 3 years left on his contract after the season. Ribeiro is a UFA, sort of a two-part question. How disappointed have the Predators been in the play of Craig Smith? And secondly, Ribeiro, is this the end of the line for him in Nashville?
Well, to start with Craig Smith, I actually think he's been playing very well in the two games that he's played since he came back from that scratch. You know, Craig Smith has scored 20 goals in this league, I believe, 3 years in a row. Only has seven this year in 44 games, but has seven shots in the two games since getting scratched in Vancouver. Of course, you need to put the puck in the net, and five of those seven goals came within the first nine games, but I think he got the message. I think what may happen, though, is Craig Smith may have played himself out of being protected in the expansion draft. I think Victor Arvidsson has assumed that fourth forward spot, assuming the Predators go with the 4-4-1 method. As for Mike Ribeiro, you know, certainly still a point producer in his later years, but at UFA at the end of the season, like you mentioned, I don't see a future for him on this team. That isn't to say that he's not going to continue to play and be a part of the Nashville Predators offense this season, but I can't imagine him being on this team past the end of this season.
Adam Vingan is with the Tennessean newspaper. He covers the Nashville Predators. Adam, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the favorites in the NHL this season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Adam Vingan of the Tennessean newspaper for joining us to talk about the Predators. Before him, you've heard from Jeremy Rutherford discussing the St. Louis Blues and TSN 1290 analyst Trevor Kidd discussing the Jets and their goaltending situation. Still to come in hour number three, Josh Brewster, Anaheim Ducks radio host, to discuss the Jets' opponent this coming Monday evening. This segment of the show brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. A lot of talk about the struggles in particularly the Western Conference this year. That it's not a very good conference. The Central Division isn't what it once was. That's not to say there aren't some tremendous hockey teams still out there. Maybe not dynastic teams. Really aren't very many dynasties anymore.
Dynamic or dynastic?
Dynastic. It's like a dynasty, but dynastic.
No, I know what the word means.
Okay. Maybe they're dynamic also. You can be one with and the other at the same time. Let me ask you guys this. As we sit here on January the 21st, you know, more than halfway through the season, who do you have? You know, if you had a $20 bill or a $50 bill or a $100 bill, if you're
a high roller. I know that Donald Trump is president now, but, I mean, I don't have that type of cake.
I know you don't. And you're not going to with him as president either.
I have cake in my fridge, though.
In your beard.
If you had some money in your pocket and you were taking a trip down to Vegas.
I don't. Lend me $20.
Not a chance. Because if I lend you $20, that's just donating you $20. That $20 is gone for good. Who are you going to go down to Vegas right now and put a couple dollars on? That's the team. That's my team from here on out that's going to be hoisting Lord Stanley's mug.
Yeah, and we talked about this off-air preparing for the show, and I thought long and hard about this. And, you know, to your point earlier, Drew, I think absolutely the Eastern Conference, for the first time in maybe 7 to 10 years, I think, is now better than the West. And we saw Chicago and L.A. kind of go back and forth and win Stanley Cups from 2010 to 2014, 2015. But I think it's unquestionable. And, you know, the Columbus Blue Jackets, you know, their 16-game winning streak has kind of catapulted them into the conversation as a top team in the Eastern Conference. But for me, I can't not go with the Pittsburgh Penguins. And, you know, I'm not saying that they're going to necessarily repeat this year. I mean, it's tough to repeat. We haven't seen that since the Detroit Red Wings did it, right? Back in, the late 90s. But top to bottom, guys, I just don't think that there's a team as good as the Pittsburgh Penguins. Maybe with the exception of the Washington Capitals. And we'll get Dave's pick here in a second. But when I look at up the middle, You're talking about Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and, you know, right now Chris Letang is injured, but Chris Letang was sensational in last year's Stanley Cup run. And then you're looking at Nick Bonino and Eric Fair. I mean, when you've got a fourth line that has Eric Fair and Chris Kunitz on it, I mean, I think it's the best fourth line in the NHL. And you have Matt Murray playing unbelievably. Marc-Andre Fleury struggled a little bit this year. But the point is, in net, they have two capable netminders. They've got a great offense. We now see so many teams trying to basically copy the Pittsburgh Penguins model, basically, you know, all about speed, 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 right? But, I mean, I just think this Pittsburgh Penguins team right now is the best team in the NHL.
Now, look, it's hard to argue with Pittsburgh, defending Stanley Cup champions, a phenomenal team, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and if Malkin's having a season like, you know, nobody expected him to be that good this year, except maybe Evgeny Malkin. But the truth is, I went with the Washington Capitals at the beginning of the season, and I've got to stick with them, and simply it's because of Braden Holtby.
By the way, just, you know, sort of cut you off, Dave, but Pittsburgh's the only team right now that has three guys in the top 20 in scoring, Crosby, Malkin, and Kessel.
Right.
Just wanted to get that in there.
Yeah, no, there's no question they can score. And in fact, when you look at scoring teams, I mean, and it's a team that nobody seems to be talking about right now, are the New York Rangers. They have, I think, 20 more goals than the next closest team in the Eastern Conference. So the New York Rangers are a very potent offense. They also let in a lot of goals.
Yeah.
Whereas the Capitals have only allowed 97 goals against as a team. I mean, and Columbus has also been very stingy. They've allowed 98. Pittsburgh, for example, has let 133 in. So, I mean, Braden Holtby, to me, and that's generally what it gets it done. You know, they say the defense gets it done in the playoffs, and it starts with your goaltender. And Braden Holtby from nearby Lloydminster, Saskatchewan, born a day after me, coincidentally.
Same year?
Not exactly the same year, but definitely the,
he's not a grizzled veteran. Then.
Yeah, definitely not the grizzled vet that I am. But he is a Virgo nonetheless, and he's outstanding. And you know, he sometimes you don't. It's interesting because Washington with Ovechkin and Backstrom and Oshie, you wonder if they don't get the respect that they deserve, and because of the lack of playoff success, people kind of have a tendency to lose focus on Washington. But because of where Alexander Ovechkin is in his career, although that doesn't appear to be waning by any stretch of the imagination, my pick is the Washington Capitals. And again, from top to bottom, they're a balanced team. They have tremendous scoring. Again, tremendous defense. And in my mind, right now, the best goaltender in potentially in the NHL.
Yeah, and I'll say this much about the Washington Capitals. I do like that D group a little bit better than Pittsburgh. So you're talking about John Carlson, Matt Niskanen, Carl Alsner, Dmitry Orlov, Nate Schmidt, I think, is an underrated defenseman. But, you know, those moves that Jim Rutherford made, Drew, last year, acquiring Justin Schultz, who, you know, isn't a top defenseman. You know, he plays top minutes for the Pittsburgh Penguins, but certainly on Edmonton, a team like Pittsburgh, I think those players are better suited for their system. You know, getting a guy like Trevor Daley. Brian Dumoulin is injured right now. I think he's a very underrated defensive defenseman. Brian Dumoulin doesn't have a goal this year, but, you know, you watch what he does. He's a very good player on the defensive side of the puck. So I think that defense is very underrated. I know Chris Letang is injured right now. Even a guy like Ian Cole used to play for the St. Louis Blues, a very good defenseman. But Washington does, I think, have the edge on defense with the group of defensemen that they have. But, I mean, the fact that Dave and I both picked teams from the Eastern Conference, I mean, it tells you. I mean, I think the balance of power has shifted in the NHL.
It'll be very interesting what happens at the trade deadline coming up on March the 1st. Perhaps the guy we're going to talk about next segment could fit in with either the Penguins or the Capitals as a rental player to propel them over the top. We'll coming back, we'll talk about Kevin Shattenkirk and where we think he ends up on March the 1st. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number 3, coming up next on TSN 1290. Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now here on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by our very good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, where they want to tell you that your opportunity to see Kelly Taylor is now past because both shows are sold out for tonight. Kelly Taylor was in town for 2 weeks. sold-out shows all the time. It really just exemplifies why you need to get your tickets nice and early to go to Rumors. You don't want to miss out on seeing Mark Normand. He's coming next week. Get your tickets now. Darren Rose from The Match Game. Jay Farrow from Saturday Night Live. They're all coming up. Get your tickets. RumorsComedyClub.com. Do it right now. Seriously. Right now. Go. Right now.
Well, I can't go. I'm doing the show.
You've multitasked before.
No. He's not good at that.
It's actually physically impossible unless I got the tickets online.
You can get the tickets online. Yeah. RumorsComedyClub.com.
I actually really want to go see Jay Farrow.
Well, you should. RumorsComedyClub.com.
But if you're going to go, you have to, as you just told you,
right
buy your
now.
Tickets.
Do it quickly. It's going to be sold out.
You want to go, Dave?
Absolutely not. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll go.
Just
not
with you.
Yeah,
exactly. Somebody who might go, likely, maybe. We've been talking about it literally, I think, probably for about 18 months now.
Kevin Shattenkirk.
I don't know if he's going to go see Jay Farrow. But he might go.
Well, if he gets traded to Winnipeg.
That would be one way of doing it. But it seems likely he's going to go out of St. Louis. He's an unrestricted free agent at season's end. Is he the biggest trade piece? I mean, you know, TSN came out earlier this week with their trade bait board. It seems like Shattenkirk, from my perspective, is the most likely candidate to be traded between now and the March 1st trade deadline.
By the way, I want to put together a TSN 1290 trade bait board and put Drew at number one. As an aside, yes, Drew, he is the biggest name on that board. I mean, you have Matt Duchene and Gabriel Landeskog on that board as well. But certainly for defensemen.
But we talked about it on Thursday's show that we would be surprised to see Duchene and Landeskog traded between now and March 1st.
Well,
whereas as we spoke with Jeremy Rutherford in the last hour, it seems more than likely that Shattenkirk's going to be dealt because he's a UFA.
Yes, yep.
It seems as though he's not always on the same page as the coaching staff. He doesn't have any interest in re-signing in St. Louis, apparently. It seems very much that he wants to go somewhere to the Eastern Conference. So Shattenkirk, you know, you put Shattenkirk up for auction, you're going to get a pretty hefty return at the trade deadline.
Well, I think as well, Drew, we talked to Jeremy Rutherford about Colton Parayko. He's a right shot defenseman. I think the emergence of Colton Parayko has also made Kevin Shattenkirk, let's say, more expendable. But Kevin Shattenkirk's an excellent offensive defenseman, and I think he doesn't get enough credit for how he's developed his defensive game as well. And they've got some really good defensemen there, obviously, with Alex Petrangelo, the franchise defenseman, and Jay Bomeister, obviously, who, you know, in his early 30s is still getting the job done. I mean, Kevin Shattenkirk is going to be very highly sought after. And you talk about the Boston Bruins. They've really coveted Kevin Shattenkirk, an American defenseman. The Detroit Red Wings, they've coveted Kevin Shattenkirk. You hear the Toronto Maple Leafs, Drew. Morgan Riley's injured right now. You hear the Leafs might have some interest in Kevin Shattenkirk. When you're talking about, you know, what Kevin Shattenkirk could bring back in a trade, mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a big haul. I think you're talking about a roster player, maybe a prospect and a first-round pick. I mean, this guy is in the prime of his career.
Can you pay that much for a guy who is a rental unless you can somehow work a sign-and-trade agreement with him?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, just because you acquire him doesn't mean you're going to sign him, but you'd think that, you know, the GM would have permission to talk to Kevin Shattenkirk about a possible contract extension after the season's over. So, I mean, let's be honest, though, the St. Louis Blues are going to ask a lot for Kevin Shattenkirk, Drew, because the Blues, let's not forget, guys, the Blues can just hang on to Kevin Shattenkirk, but then you lose him for nothing.
And that's what we talked about with Jeremy in the last hour. You know, they lost David Backes for nothing. They lost Troy Brouwer for nothing. You can only lose so many guys off your roster for nothing before it begins to affect the bottom line of how your team performs. And when a guy like, I mean, let's be honest, the St. Louis Blues team right now, with Jake Allen's struggles, with the way their season has progressed, they're not better than the Blackhawks. They're not better than the Minnesota Wild. They're not better than the Ducks, and they're not better than the Sharks. They're not really a Western Conference contender.
Well, I agree with you. I wouldn't put them in the same class as Minnesota or Chicago, but as we know, Drew, it's all about goaltending in the playoffs.
Right.
So if your goaltender does get hot, any team can emerge. I mean, nobody expected
their goaltender is such a basket case right now.
Right.
He can't even come to Winnipeg.
Yeah, but I mean, there's also a chance, you know, they bring someone else in, or, you know, Jake Allen turns. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
I mean,
okay.
Right now, I mean, the playoffs are always wide open. We know that. Not many people thought that the Pittsburgh Penguins were going to win the Stanley Cup last year, right? Except for you. So, I mean, look, it looks like Kevin Shattenkirk's going to be traded, Dave, but as far as what he's going to bring back, I still think that the St. Louis Blues are going to ask for a lot. It's going to be a high draft pick, a high round draft pick, a roster player, and some prospects, because Shattenkirk, a defenseman like him, they just don't come around often in trade situations.
Sixth overall, Dave, before I can get you to jump in here. Sixth overall in points right now among defensemen. He's got 30 points on the season, trailing Brent Burns, Victor Hedman, Eric Karlsson, Justin Schultz, who's had a great offensive year for the Penguins, Duncan Keith, and then Shattenkirk. So you're talking about a guy who is an elite offensive defenseman, maybe gives it up a little bit more than you'd like on the back end, but improving on the back end as well.
Listening to Jeremy Rutherford talk in one of our previous segments made me think of the Winnipeg Jets, the way he was talking about the problems within their organization and the struggles that they're going through. And you think to yourself, as you just touched on, Drew, and I think you're 100% right, when you're talking about NHL teams, these assets are important. And if you think you're a contender, and if you think that this is the year you're going to challenge for the Stanley Cup, then you hold on to assets and you don't worry about allowing the trade deadline to pass, because you have to go for the stand. When you have that window of opportunity, and we know, generally speaking, it's not a huge window for success in the Stanley Cup playoffs and a chance to get your team to the Stanley Cup finals. If you know that window isn't there, what do you do? Now, if you think that it's close, then maybe you have to get something back, because back-to-back years now, St. Louis has been attempting to hang on to their assets despite the fact that they would have had an opportunity to trade them, and they've been burnt because they've lost the players to free agency, not getting any assets back. So now you have an opportunity, like Ez touched on, to make a trade. And, me personally, I look at a team like the Rangers, because, he's from nearby Greenwich, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And from what I've read, there seems to be a lot of interest from his part. Yeah, again, speculation, but that the Rangers would be a team that he would like to play for. So, and again, could the Rangers use him? For sure, why not? He's a dynamic defenseman, has very good offensive skills, and as he touched on, has worked on his defensive game as well.
So, I mean, using the New York Rangers, and I agree, I think there are going to be a lot of teams that are after Kevin Shattenkirk, but using the Rangers as an example, are they going to have to give up? Who are they going to have to give up? I mean, the Rangers don't have many high-end prospects because they haven't drafted very high. But
they've traded all their draft picks.
Well, are you going to have to give up, for example, a Pavel Buchnevich, a rookie forward who has been very good for the Rangers this year? Like, the St. Louis Blues are not going to trade Kevin Shattenkirk for a fourth-round draft pick. No. I mean, they're going to want, I don't know if it's a first or a second, and they're going to want a young player in return, whether that's a forward or a defenseman. So, Brady Shea, for example, are they going to have to give up Brady Shea to get Kevin Shattenkirk? I don't know. I mean, I think the price is going to be high for Shattenkirk, though.
Well, it's interesting that a lot of the teams, Darren Dreger addressed this on Insider Trading earlier this week, and a lot of the teams he mentioned, in the East are teams that I would not describe as Stanley Cup favorites. He talks about the Maple Leafs. Well, the Maple Leafs are having a nice year and they might make the playoffs, but nobody expects the Leafs to be really in it, to win the Stanley Cup, of course. The Rangers, they're having a nice year. Dave, you talked about their offense, but they've really been giving it back on the back end as of late. They started so hot, they've now dropped down into a wild card spot. The Bruins, the Bruins are a middling team. The Red Wings, they're out of it. They're really looking for next season. So the elite in the East haven't really yet been linked to Kevin Shattenkirk, which I think almost will drive down the value that the Blues will be able to acquire for him. Because if you're the Bruins, you don't really need Kevin Shattenkirk in a rental. You need him on a long-term basis, and you can wait till July 1st.
Well, that's an option, though. I mean, I think the team that is looking to acquire him is going to want to sign him long-term, as opposed to Andrew Ladd, for example,
right,
last year.
But it's not like you're acquiring a guy who's under contract for another 4 years, and you're willing to give up a young prospect.
No, I realize that. I'm just saying that I think that a team that is looking to acquire Kevin Shattenkirk is probably going to have those discussions with his agent about, okay, if we trade for you, is this a place where you want to sign long-term? I'm just saying, I think that is a possibility.
And if you're Kevin Shattenkirk, I'd be surprised why you would give up the leverage. You keep waiting and waiting your career, the first 7-8 years of your career, to make it to free agency. I wouldn't, for the life of me, I would not figure out why a player would want to give up that.
Does he have a no-move clause?
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't believe he would have a no-move clause, because I don't think he'd be eligible for a no-move clause yet.
Right, so he can't control that.
He can't control it, but he can control. Why would he re-sign? Why would he give up the UFA that's coming on July 1st to sign a long-term deal?
No, I agree. I agree with you. I'm just saying that I think that a team that is trying to acquire him isn't necessarily just getting him as a rental. That's all I'm saying.
I agree that they would not like it, but I think the Blues are sort of in a difficult position where they may not be able to extract as much for Shattenkirk because the upper echelon teams in the East, the Capitals, the Blue Jackets, the Penguins, don't seem to yet be in the market for him. He's more linked to those second-tier teams that might say, we're not going to give up a ton for him. We're going to wait till July 1st and see if we can get him as an unrestricted free agent
right,
at that
but
point.
Just because Shattenkirk is linked to those teams doesn't necessarily mean that a Washington or a Columbus or a Pittsburgh or a Montreal. Montreal's a team that would love to have another offensive defenseman, right?
Absolutely.
So, no, but you make a good point. This Kevin Shattenkirk situation, Drew, is going to be fascinating. You mentioned it at the top of the segment. Kevin Shattenkirk was linked to the Edmonton Oilers last year. I mean, the Kevin Shattenkirk rumors have been around for 2 years.
Yeah.
So it looks like this is finally the year that we're going to find out, is he going to get traded or is he going to just stay with the Blues and then he's going to test the free agency waters on July 1st?
We are less than 6 weeks away before the March 1st trade deadline. Rest assured, all trade deadline coverage on March 1st, extensive coverage here on 1290, and of course leading up to that day, culminating with an episode of NHL This Week on Wednesday, March 1st.
Hopefully there's more trades than there were last year.
Yeah, well, hopefully there's a lot of trades and they all happen in a short window of time, preferably when we're on air because that would be ideal for us. Let's go to break. When we come back, some players were asked a very interesting question. What would the players do to change the game to make it better? We discuss the responses next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. 20 minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's Drew Mandel and the Deplorables.
You guys are the Deplorables? I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
I've been called deplorable before.
Really?
No.
That seems like a pretty... I mean...
No, I don't think
sometimes
I
it's an apropos... insult. I would argue that it was back when it was uttered in, you know, early October, whenever it was uttered during the presidential campaign.
Maybe back in my captain days of softball, you know, when I was a hard-nosed captain for the House of Ashkenazi. That's potentially when I was called deplorable by the other captains.
Were you a harder-nosed captain than I am?
No, not by any stretch of the imagination.
They used to call Dave the Hebrew Hammer.
They still do, actually.
Who's they?
Me, my dad, you.
Okay, fair enough. Anyways, we'll avoid the deplorables comment. We'll try to avoid politics as much as possible because we're going to talk hockey. It's much more peaceful to think about hockey than it is.
I'm not so sure it is.
Well, you know, given your two alternatives.
I was going to say, have you seen Twitter lately? It's not exactly a safe place to be.
I turn it off. I just can't be bothered. I don't know how people have the time or the energy to bicker and to fight about this. I really don't.
So we don't have Putin coming up on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline?
No, but I will say one thing.
I'm talking about hockey in this case, not politics.
When he scored like 75 goals?
Yeah.
No, the one thing I'll say, though, is that it's funny to me how we have this Bell Let's Talk Day, which is, you know, coming up next week. It's an important day, I think.
Next Wednesday.
Yeah, but it's amazing how people can't carry it over. Like, it's unbelievable, and there used to be that, it's like, just these people get so worked up about Twitter, and it's like, people, like, don't you have anything better to do? And I'm not.
Can't you just let other people? I mean, people are welcome to their opinions. If you think it's a stupid opinion, there's a great way to avoid it. It's either to put down your phone and walk away from it, or to press the mute button and not listen to it, or to press the block button, whatever it might be. There's easy ways to avoid getting into these pissant arguments with random strangers about. I mean, come on, find something better to do with your time. Is all I'm saying. In any event. Players throughout the league were asked questions from some of the ESPN.com columnists. They were asked about what would they do to make the game better. Now, I can only assume that when the players answered, they then immediately went on to Twitter to fight with the other players who didn't support their opinions. But some really interesting ones, and some you might not necessarily think of immediately. The most popular ones had to do most of the answers had to do with increasing scoring. You know, more scoring is what the players were often looking for. But how to achieve that additional scoring was often interesting. There were answers from Brendan Gallagher, such as making the net bigger.
Yep.
Okay, we've heard that in, you know, the last little while. There's answers about, you know, smaller goalie pads.
Yep.
Which we know is going to be occurring.
Next month.
Austin Matthews is, you know, talking about they're going to be coming with the new streamlined pants. Starting next week, I believe, and then streamlined shoulder pads and more form-fitting stuff, I believe, in the off-season. Eliminating the trapezoid, That came from Cam Ward and Braden Holtby. They both thought, Braden Holtby said, yeah, I think the game's in a pretty good spot, but eliminating the trapezoid is a good option. I thought the best one I got from a guy we know very well here in Winnipeg, hockey-related, Ron Hainsey, said coaches can only coach offense, not defense, and coaches should have money incentives in their contracts for goals scored by their team.
It's very interesting.
0% chance that ever happens.
No, I mean, it's not going to happen.
I thought that was a great answer.
No, I agree with you, Drew. I like that answer from Ronnie, hockey-related revenue Hainsey. You know what one I also really, really liked? And by the way, how many years have I been saying eliminate the trapezoid?
Many.
It's the Marty Brodeur rule, and it's ridiculous. Let goalies play the puck. It not only it makes for, when the goalies come out of the come out of their crease, it makes for more entertaining hockey, but it also saves defensemen. Don Cherry's been talking about this for years. I don't want to just harp on that, but I also liked what Ian Cole said.
Well, as soon as I saw this list, I was like, there's no question Ezzie loves the Ian Cole one.
Ian Cole said eliminate the puck over the glass rule. And is that because he's a defenseman? Maybe. But let's be honest. How many times have we seen Jets defensemen shoot the puck over the glass and then they have a late power play? I mean, that was stupid. That was brought in, 10 years ago? Get rid of that. It shouldn't even exist for goaltenders. Especially when it's accidental, but I don't want to just, focus on those two. But there's some very interesting comments. You mentioned Ron Hainsey's, Drew, and I mean, if you look around the NHL this year, and I believe goal scoring is up a little bit, but some of those games that we've seen, that one between Pittsburgh and Washington where the Penguins won 8-7, fans want to see goal scoring. And, Austin Matthews and Brendan Gallagher talk about, bigger nets. I mean, first of all, Austin Matthews has 22 goals. If he has bigger nets, he's probably going to have 50 goals at this point.
Bigger nets, the problem I have with bigger nets is it changes what we've seen.
Yes.
It makes, you almost have to put a asterisk at all the statistics after that when it changed the nets.
Well, that's like in the NBA saying that you're going to raise the nets an extra half foot.
Or in Major League Baseball when the mound, because the mound has been at different heights throughout. Or in the NFL when they changed how they call defensive pass interference or defensive holding and how you're not allowed to touch the receivers anymore, the offensive numbers skyrocketed. So there is a bit of, you have to put a bit of an asterisk next to all of that.
Right, and I've always said this, Drew, that, every time, we talk about possible rule changes, I think the game is in a great place. Do I think there's overcoaching and too much defense at times, Dave? Absolutely. But when you talk about making the nets bigger, I mean, yes, then you're fundamentally changing the sport of hockey and how we've seen the nets since really hockey has existed. So I think, if you're going to make the nets bigger, I mean, you got to be very careful how you do it because that's going to be a permanent move.
Interesting that two Minnesota Wild players both wanted to reinstitute the red line. Eric Staal and Ryan Suter both said, let's see the red line come back.
Well, because what the problem is, with any time the NHL tweaks the rules, these coaches figure out ways to counteract the tweak.
Of course. I mean, they adjust. I mean, that's what you're going to do. You have to adjust to accommodate for a change. I mean, it's evolve or die. If you don't, then your team is going to get burnt by the change.
That's
you have to. I mean, maybe sometimes you would say that that's why it's good to have tweaks in the game, simply because otherwise the game becomes stagnant because it just gets, as you just touched on, it gets overcoached. I mean, I liked Evgeny Kuznetsov's, which was eliminate TV timeouts. And obviously it's not happening because you need the TV timeouts to generate revenue. But because he basically says that it would make it kills the pace of the game. The teams are – you're in a hard battle for, back and forth for 35 seconds to a minute. And all of a sudden, a whistle goes and the pace of the game stops because you have to go and take a 1.5-minute break to go to the TV timeout.
I'm not sure why they can't eliminate the TV timeouts. I don't know if it would mean you'd have to extend the intermission by another couple minutes or whatever.
Well, they've dropped the intermission, right? It used to be a true 20, and now it's 18.
No, I thought it was I thought it was 15, and then they bumped it to 18. But you could be right. I don't want to speak to that one way or the other. Honestly, I'm fine. If you want to make the periods, almost commercial-free or TV timeout-free, or maybe only one TV timeout instead of the three that currently exist in a period, I'd be fine with that if it means extending the intermission, because you're absolutely right. It does kill the flow to the game when you have, the TV timeouts, well, I guess it's after the 12-minute mark they have a TV timeout.
Yeah, I can't remember.
And then 8 and 4, something like that. I think that's when the first whistle after those three marks.
By the way, I don't know if you guys saw Jeff Skinner's response, but he said cutting the knobs off of the top of goalie sticks. I wasn't sure, if he's been butt-ended or something.
No, I think he says, you know, it's really, I believe his full comment was, it's really disappointed when you think you score and you think you've beaten the goalie, but then the puck ricochets off the top of the goalie sticks, the knob on the goalie stick and goes wide or something. I'm thinking, how often does that happen
to
you?
Well, last night in the San Antonio, Manitoba game, the San Antonio thought they scored. The horn went off. Turned out it was just the butt end of Eric Comrie's stick going into the net.
Like it flew off, like the shot?
No. But just like the way he made the save, the butt end of his stick went into the net.
Okay.
So they thought he scored. Like the San Antonio players reacted that he scored.
They thought it was the puck.
Yeah, and the puck. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, the play still goes on.
It was the inanimate goalie knob.
It was a bizarre one from Jeff Skinner. That was the most bizarre of them all.
Yeah, I thought that was a little unusual.
I was like, how often has this been an issue for you, Jeff, that you want to cut the knobs off the top of goalie sticks?
And also John Tavares saying anything to make the schedule easier I thought was funny.
Well, he's right about that, and Ryan Johansson is doubly right when he says the game is in a pretty good place, but the season's too long.
Yeah, but again, they're not going to shorten it.
No, for revenue again. But there's no question in my mind that the season's way too long.
Honestly, if they said to everybody, you know, if they said to the players, we're going to roll back your salary 10% and we're going to shorten the season by 10%, you know, get rid of 8 games, and they said to the fans, you know, I mean, they can continue to screw the fans. I mean, they have no problem doing that. But honestly, if they said that we're going to do whatever, the NHL and the NHLPA and the ownership is going to get together and we're going to lessen the season by 7 games or 10 games and make it a 75-game season or a 72-game season, I don't know anybody. Fans, players.
Owners. Well, sorry, I had to cut you off. Owners, period.
Well, owners, if they could roll back the salaries accordingly, then, I mean, I think there is certainly an appetite for it from the fans' perspective. The season's too damn long. The games, the players know that the season's too long. The coaches know the season's too damn long. I mean, honestly, they could keep season ticket prices relatively similar because fans don't seem to matter whatever ownership does. They seem to be buying tickets.
Drew, you notice what wasn't brought up?
Not
one player said take fighting out of the game.
Well, I mean, fighting is already practically out of the game, so I don't think it's anything that needs to
be mandated. Well, I'm just saying, at no point did any player... I realize fighting is down. I'm just saying it's one of those things that, you know, people talk about as something that, you know, a lot of the players want out of the game, but I don't think that's true.
I don't think players want it out of the game either. If they wanted it out of the game, they'd get it out of the game. I agree with you. I think fighting, I mean, I don't want to talk about fighting anymore. Those who fight, fight. They want to fight, that's their own free will. Go ahead. But I don't think players themselves have any interest in seeing it mandated out of the game.
You got to fight the good fight, Drew.
Let's go to break. Josh Brewster, the Anaheim Ducks radio host, joins us next to talk about the Jets' opponent this coming Monday. We see the Ducks for the first time this season. Josh talks to us next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour here on TSN 1290. Josh Brewster, Anaheim Ducks radio host, is going to join us momentarily to discuss the team from Anaheim. The first time the Jets and the Ducks will have met this season, coming up Monday night at MTS. And it's sort of the rare back-to-back situation where the Jets are the home team for both of them. You don't often see a home team play back-to-back games. You're going to see it a couple times over the next few months. I believe there's a Friday-Saturday as well where the Jets meet the Blackhawks on the Friday night and I think the Lightning on the Saturday. I think that's coming up here in February. Anyways, the Ducks make their lone visit to Winnipeg coming up this Monday night. Josh Brewster of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network joins us next.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Josh Brewster, Anaheim Ducks post-game radio host, joins us now on TSN 1290. Josh, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Josh. Haven't seen the Ducks yet this year, as I mentioned. You know, so far, the Ducks are sort of continuing on where they left off under Bruce Boudreau in that they are a playoff team. You know, Randy Carlyle has them atop the Pacific Division with a record of 26-13-9 so far this year, good for 61 points in the Pacific. How would you describe the Ducks season so far, sort of another year under Carlyle as he returns in his second stint as the head coach?
Well, I think the first thing is that the talent level stays the same, and they've been successful. I think the difference, one of the biggest differences really in the style of play. You know, Randy likes that hard forecheck and very direct to the net. I happen to prefer the way that Randy likes, or I prefer Randy's scheme. And I think one thing with the Ducks right now is that they're, you know, they're on top of that division, and they generally are doing very well. But they have some few things they want to continue to work on, and I don't think that that's the worst position to be in, where they're not just, you know, rolling through the league and being a great regular season story. I mean, they've got a couple things they need to improve, and when you're sitting on top of the division and you still have some stuff to work on, I don't think that's the worst situation.
Josh, how much pressure is there on this Ducks team to not just do well in the playoffs, but win a Stanley Cup? It's been 10 years since the Ducks won the Stanley Cup.
Oh, the pressure is huge, and, you know, it's as everybody talks about, you have four straight, you know, Game 7 exits in the playoffs. I often point out that the Game 6 has disturbed me more than the Game 7s because they've been up 3-2 in all these series. But they're under intense pressure to produce. You know, it's not like they had a few years where they didn't make the playoffs and now here they're coming back. You know, they've been consistently good, which is a tribute to the organization. At the same time, you've got some question marks about, hey, how come we haven't seen you back in the final, or, you know, how come you haven't been able to win these series when you're leading? So, you know, Perry and Getzlaff have a lot of pressure right now because the goals are not coming for them, and they're taking a lot of heat, I know, on my show. So I think the pressure's pretty intense, quite honestly. The expectations are very high, and, of course, you're chasing your crosstown rival who've won their second cup, so you got that too.
Josh, how aggressive or how active do you anticipate Anaheim being during the trade deadline or in advance of the trade deadline?
Yeah, I think you can expect Bob Murray to do something. I do believe that. I have a feeling that a veteran winger might be on his mind, and I think that, you know, I think he's probably got something up his sleeve. Where he deals from, when you have a team that's so pressed hard up against the cap, I don't know. But I think that you can expect something, and whether that would cost them, let's say it's a winger, okay? If that would cost them a defenseman, for example, I think it would probably be a prospect like Shea Theodore or Brandon Montour or Jakob Larsson, who's playing in Sweden. So it'll be very interesting. And with Murph, you know, with Bob Murray, it's never what you expect.
Josh Brewster, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Josh is the Anaheim Ducks post-game radio host. The Ducks in town to face the Jets this coming Monday night. Josh, I mentioned off the top, of course, Randy Carlyle back hired as the Ducks head coach, his second stint behind the bench there. Have you noticed any difference in Randy Carlyle from, you know, his time previously with the Ducks or his time in Toronto versus the Randy Carlyle you're seeing so far this year? Is it pretty much status quo? You know what you get with Randy Carlyle.
Well, you know, it's still Randy, you know, and you know, a tiger doesn't change his stripes. But at the same time, he's talked about, you know, learning how to deal with a younger NHL and younger players. You know, it's slightly different even than when they won the Cup 10 years ago. You know, they had even a little more of a veteran crew. But I think a lot of the stuff that people have, you know, wanted to know whether has changed about Randy is stuff that happens in the locker room that, you know, we don't really see anyway. You know, it's not like he was never the guy to come to the press and start, you know, screaming and yelling. It's not like he was airing all this laundry publicly. And, you know, you just always heard whispers that, he, toward the end of his tenure, his relations with, you know, Getzlaff and Perry might not have been that great, and you hear about all this, but at the same time, you know, when it came time to hire Randy, you know, Randy went up to visit Corey Perry, and, you know, you hear a lot of stuff about what's in the dressing room, and quite honestly, I usually dismiss about 90% of it, depending on the source. I think that, you know, Randy had some clubs that weren't, you know, as good as his 2006-2007 club toward the end. And I don't think there was any big problem with Randy's personality. I just think that people perceive him as an older guy who needs to learn how to deal with the younger guys. But if you look at it from the younger player perspective, when he walks in the room, somebody asked me, what do the players see when Randy walks in the room? I think they see a guy who won the Norris Trophy. to be honest with you. I think that's what a player sees, you know, and there's a lot of respect there. So I think his relations with the players are fine. And, you know, quite honestly, you know, at $2.7 million average salary, you know, shut up and listen to what the coach has to say. You know what I mean?
Josh, in your opinion, are enough people around the hockey world talking about how good of a season John Gibson is really having? He's got 19 wins already. He's on pace to play 60-plus games. He's never played that many games in the NHL before. Just how good has he been this year for the Ducks?
Well, he's been really good, especially of late. Now, I think the first couple months of the season, I think it was clear that he needed to work on some positioning issues and really get the timing down at the NHL level, not lunge across the crease so that you can't recover and come back. And even though he's 3-4 years into his career, I think that there's a timing element and an emotional element. And I happened to run into Martin Brodeur, so I asked him about this because they were dealing with Carter Hutton now in St. Louis. And he said, you know, When I was young, there was always an opponent who got in my head. He said, I was yanked. So the first 7 times I played the Rangers, I was yanked. You got to deal with the fact that there's going to be opponents that get in your head. There's just going to be opponents that bother you. There's also going to be times where you're not going to be able to handle the fact that you're the man, whether the team is good or whether the team stinks. You're the man. You got to deal with a lot of emotion. So I think what's happened with John Gibson, let's say like the last month or so, is that he was good. But now he's really playing great because the bad goals are not there. There was always like one bad goal every game or every other game. And I was often dismissive of that. But then, you know, when you really think about it, they add up. And, you know, the save percentage expectation in today's NHL is pretty ridiculous. I mean, expecting a 9-2 or whatever it is now. But he's up there now. You know, he's up to .92, and he's got his goals against are going down, 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 down. And he's starting to creep into the top 10 or 12 goaltenders. So I think the last month he's been great, and he's been working on some stuff, and it's obvious. And I think he can expect that Randy will pile on now. It's going to be a lot of Gibson now for the rest of the way.
Josh, one player that doesn't seem to get a lot of mention, perhaps outside of Anaheim, is Rickard Rakell, who has 19 goals this season, one short of his career high, which he had in 72 last year. He had 20. And his shooting percentage is like 21% or something like that. Like, is he just a player that, you know, again, isn't getting a lot of notoriety outside of Anaheim, but, I mean, he should be based on the way he's playing this season.
Yeah, you know, he is. It's funny you mention this because I would prefer, if I'm a Ducks fan, well, which I am, the paycheck says Ducks, right? So I would prefer that the Ducks get no attention at all, honestly. And with regard to Rickard Rakell, I think, you know, his goals per game is right up there with players like Sidney Crosby. He's like third in goals per game, and that's really huge. He had a few, I think he had a half dozen games off where he didn't score a goal, but it's basically like every other night or every third night he's scoring a goal. And he, you know, he had this appendectomy, and they had to redo some things surgically, and he came in late, and nobody knew what they were going to get. And also, you know, listen, we're in a league where, you know, we've seen guys get a $3-4 million payday, whatever it is, for a bridge deal like he got, and then they come back and they never score 20 goals again, and they never get close. But he came in and he's on an upward trajectory, and he can play center, he can play wing. I think he's a kid who is going to be. He's going to be the face of the Ducks just as surely as Corey Perry or Ryan Getzlaff is right now.
Josh Brewster, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Josh is the Anaheim Ducks post-game radio host. The Ducks visiting Winnipeg this coming Monday night. Josh, when he signed the contract, Ryan Kessler is who I'm talking about, when he signed that big long-term contract, a lot of people sort of raised their eyebrows at the amount and the years and the dollar value and thought this is a guy who was already on a downward trajectory. Pardon me. So far this year, safe to say he's been the Ducks' best forward, 38 points in 48 games, 18 goals and 20 assists. Has he been the Ducks' best forward, to your mind, this season?
Beyond. I mean, he's so heads above now. It's funny, they have a new number one line, you know. The Getzlaff and Perry aren't really the number one line now, and the coaches acknowledge this. Their number one line is a shutdown line that scores. Cogliano, Silverberg, and Kessler, in my view, they might be the best line in the entire National Hockey League. And that's not an exaggeration for what they do. Every single one of them should be considered for the Selke, and only one will, which is Kessler, because he's a center and it seems to always go to a center. But all three of them, to me, as far as I'm concerned, deserve high votes for the Selke. But they're generating a lot of goals. And as far as Kessler goes, I just think it's a guy who, you know, maybe at the time that he signed the deal, it wasn't like he scored 40 earlier in his career. When he signed the deal, it wasn't like he had just scored 40. And so people look at that and they say, well, you know, that's a lot of money. But, you know, I got to tell you, you got to, when you're a GM, you got to judge the personality. And Kessler, he's a funny guy. He does these funny videos for the team and everything, but he is dead serious about his conditioning and how seriously he takes the game. He's also dead serious about shutting down your top guy. I mean, you know, he's got a bunch of goals, but a lot of this has been making, you know, big time forwards chase him around the ice. And I think that you got to consider whether Kessler deserves votes for the Hart. Now, he won't get them. I don't think they always want, like, the top-end scorers, right? But I think there's no doubt that Ryan Kessler is right now one of the finest players in the game. There's nothing he hasn't done. And, you know, between penalty kill, power play, shorthanded, huge face-off percentage, one of the highest in the league, and all the goals and stuff. And, I mean, he really is now, I think he's bigger. He has a bigger impact now than probably even maybe when he scored 40 for Vancouver and they went all the way to the final. I mean, he might even be playing better than that.
Josh, we'll let you go on this last question. Nick Ritchie is a guy who was drafted right after Nikolaj Ehlers back in 2014, the draft in Philadelphia. Sort of coming into his own in his first extended stint with the Anaheim Ducks, you know, 11 goals on the season. Is he just sort of beginning to understand the NHL game now that he's halfway through his inaugural season with the Ducks? You know, as I mentioned, those 11 goals in 46 games. Is he now beginning to understand the NHL game more than, you know, and ahead of that rookie curve?
He is exactly what you would want out of a sophomore player. He is, as far as a second year guy goes, he's got his 11 goals now. He could easily break 20 or get close to it, but he's got, I think, 155 or 160 hits. He's way up. He's always hitting, which to me is a statistic that's only good in the extreme. And he's got a lot of hits. He's always involved. One thing, if you look at Nick Ritchie that I've liked this year, aside from the fact that he's improved, he's slimmed down a little, he scores every third, fourth, fifth, or sixth game. Every few games, he comes in with a goal. And he literally, if it's 47 games or whatever, and he has 11 goals, he is literally scoring like every four and a half games. And that's really key, because it's not like he scores two, then he has a stretch of 12 where he doesn't do anything. He's really, really consistent. And everybody talks about we need consistency. He's giving them consistency as a second-year guy. And I think that, you know, he's got a little bit of that Clark Gillies in him, and you got to have that role filled. And he really is truly bringing something to the Ducks that not every player can bring. You know, Andrew Cogliano plays the way he plays. A smaller guy with all the speed and tenacity. But Nick Ritchie is the big guy who can fill that kind of a role. And so, you know how every team, you got to have some roles, and he's doing that, and I think his career trajectory is on the up. And I need to mention something to you guys, because you guys are old Smythe Division guys out there in Winnipeg, is that I was fortunate enough to have the great one on the show the other night. And if you want to hear it, it was actually quite funny. He was quite good. It's at hockeytalkradio.com. It's archived with all my shows, and you can see Gretz there. And but I thought of you because it's the old Smythe Divige, and we were talking. You know, it's the Winnipeg thing. I remember when Brian Hayward told me, he said I let in the six most goals to Wayne Gretzky, and I just remember those Jets Oilers tilts with all those goals. So tell your listeners to check it out.
Yeah, we remember those too, and we always used to end up on the short end of
I know. It didn't work out too well.
No, but anytime you can talk to Gretz, I'm sure it's a good listen. We'll direct our listeners that way.
You'll like it. Yeah, you'll like it. It's funny, and you'll like it.
Well, and Josh, we just saw Gretzky here in October for the Heritage Classic, so it was great to see him and all the ex-Oilers out there with some of the Jets alumni.
Excellent.
Josh Brewster is the Anaheim Ducks post-game radio host. Josh, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Lots of fun, guys. Call me anytime.
Will do, Josh. Take care. Let's go to break. When we return, we'll look at the AHL affiliate, the Manitoba Moose. Our Moose insider, Dave Minuk, will give us some goings-on with the squad. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. One final segment Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Remember, right after us, Hustler and Lawless, they're live at Boston Pizza City Place. They got 2 hours of H&L leading you right into Mr. Rick Ralph. And the pregame show before the 2 o'clock puck drop between the Blues and the Jets this afternoon at MTS Center. Programming note, NHL this week returns to Wednesdays. We've been on Thursdays the last few weeks. We're back on Wednesday. So Wednesday night, 6 p.m., we'll get you set. We'll look back at the three-game homestand against the Blues this afternoon, and then the Ducks and the Sharks. We'll get you set for the Jets' trip to Chicago prior to the All-Star break next weekend. So that's NHL this week coming up on Wednesday. I meant to ask you this, Dave, as we talk about the Moose. I don't think I asked you, but you're at a Moose game. I believe it was right around New Year's or so.
Yep.
And you got hit in the head by a puck. How did this happen? I think I meant to ask you about this a couple weeks ago.
Well, it was funny because I said something to Mike McIntyre, who covers the Moose for the Winnipeg Free Press, and he put it out there on social media. And then I was getting phone calls from my parents in Florida. I was getting concerned phone calls from my aunt. People were worried that I had been knocked, concussed. It actually feels like it knocked something into my head properly. But
you feel smarter than
I actually feel smarter, so maybe it wasn't such a bad thing.
Were you taking the pregame skate with the team? What was going on there?
I did have some people questioned whether the puck somehow made it into the press box. That was an interesting one. I said, I don't even think Dustin Byfuglien could do that. But no, I was making a sacrifice, as I usually do for Illegal Curve. The social media aspect of Illegal Curve, I should say.
Don't miss an opportunity to pat yourself on the back.
Yeah, well, I should. I mean, you know. But anyway, so I was down at the ice level because Greg Husson, I believe. Was that the game, Greg Husson? It would have been. Greg Husson was the local firefighter who was signed by Manitoba to back up Andre Pavlik when Eric Comrie had the flu a couple weeks back. So
signed to that amateur trial.
Yeah, it was just an amateur trial. Yeah, okay. It was because Jamie Phillips was in Atlanta and he was on his way. He couldn't get back in time to back up Andre Pavlik. So they signed a local guy. And so I thought it was an interesting story. And I figured, okay, I'll go down to the ice level. Get some pictures for him coming out to warm up. You know, and again, so I took the picture and I learned a valuable lesson. Don't take a picture and start doing social media immediately thereafter, because I happened to be looking down at my phone and all of a sudden it was like boink. And I'm like, what the heck was that? And I look around. I thought someone had just like thrown something at me, and it was just from the crowd. And I look over, and there's a puck on the ground. And I thought to myself, did I just get hit in the head of the puck? Because obviously, it hit the mesh, rolled over the mesh, hit the glass, and so it wasn't like
it was like a shot.
Drew, are you out of your mind? I'd be concussed. I'd be with Patrick Laine right now. Like, I'd be.
I don't know. I just hear Dave gets tapped on the head by a puck. It's a whole different story.
Yeah, it was more of a ricochet than an actual hit in the head. But it was a good story. A lot of people like the story on IllegalCurve.com. So,
well, that was the funniest part, because it was the day after Patrick Laine had his concussion, and then Dave gets hit with a puck. So we were worried that Dave might have a concussion. But I think we learned one thing from this. Dave is the toughest member of IC.
Well, it's funny because Ezzy was tweeting out saying
North End roots coming through. Yeah, well, coming through, shining
North,
through
North End would be happy with my North End roots showing up there. But no, it was funny because Ez was tweeting like, am I in the quiet room? But I didn't have to. It was a glancing blow, and I was recovered enough to go upstairs and do my duties.
Well, that's good to know. Moose winners last night in San Antonio. They play there again tonight after they lost 4-3 on Wednesday to the Texas Stars. Improved to 4-6 since January 1st. They're now 16-18-3-2. On the season, you know, bit of the struggles, but also in keeping with sort of how they've been all season since the new year, Dave. Is that a fair assessment? That you watch them more than I do? You watch them probably more than almost anybody in the city. So how would you assess the Moose play since the new year?
You know what? It's been close. I mean, they're not getting blown out in these games. Like, generally, a lot of these games and the Toronto games, they were extremely, just after the new year, they were extremely close games. I mean, they were outshot in some of them, but they managed to stay in tight. And then, you know, they lost in the third period a couple of times, you know, on late goals against, Overall, though, they've played well, and you know, I tweeted this out last night. They're already a month ahead of where they were last year. Last year, they had 16 wins on February 20th, and this year they achieved that on January 20th. So, and again, it's not necessarily an equal schedule, but for the most part, that's, you know, it's a
they're
fairly.
Last year they were terrible.
Yeah, they said that their goal was for development, and for the most part, it is, and we're seeing that. And again, that to me is why you don't touch players like Jack Roslovic, Kyle Connor.
How has Connor been since he was sent down?
He's been good. I mean, his offensive abilities are off the charts. His vision, his speed are excellent. But he has a lot to learn on the defensive game. There's no question. Sometimes he can look a little bit lost defensively. He's not big yet. He needs to grow into his body. So every once in a while, he's not winning those tough battles that you have to win as a player in the NHL. So I think, you know, again, that's why you see the development aspect of this league. And you see players like, I mean, Jack Roslovic scored a beauty goal where he put the afterburners on yesterday and went right around the defenseman and went upstairs. And that's what you need. You've got guys like Jack Roslovic, Kyle Connor, Chase DeLeo to a lesser degree, you know, Brendan Lemieux, Quinton Howden. You have a lot of prospects. So even like guys like, I mean, it's interesting because remember, this is a team last year where we were calling up, you see guys getting called up like Patrice Cormier, Scott Kosmachuk, JC Lapon, not to the same degree anymore. So it's good for the organization.
That's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guest, Josh Brewster, the Anaheim Ducks radio host. We had Adam Bingen of the Tennessean newspaper, Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and Trevor Kidd, TSN 1290 analyst. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes and on tsn1290.ca and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big props to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Great job to producer Al behind the board making us sound good. For Dave Manouk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.